Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On this edition of Free Culture Radio, navigating human rights in drug policy reform. The 6th European Harm Reduction Conference was held recently in Warsaw, Poland, bringing together service providers, people who use drugs, policy reformers, public officials, and others from across Europe and around the world. In one of the sessions, entitled Navigating Human Rights and Drug Policy Reform, panelists provided a comprehensive overview of the evolving global human rights landscape, responding to the key consequences of the war on drugs, or rather the war on some people who use some drugs. Let's hear from one of the speakers. Victoria Kalniuk is with the Alliance for Public Health.
I'm coming directly from Ukraine, and I would like to dedicate my speech to the Ukrainian defenders who continue to fight against Russian occupiers, giving me a chance to leave and to participate today in this panel. Also, I express my heartfelt support for people in Sakartvelo who are now standing up against pro-Russian and undemocratic direction of their government. So I began my speech with political statements because in our daily work we witness how destructive trends in politics and legislation negatively impacts people's lives, particularly those who are the most vulnerable to HIV and are the most marginalized. Autocratic and inhuman approaches, often backed up by Moscow, are poisoning Central Asian and Eastern European regions and hindering progress in public health. In recent years, we have witnessed a parade of undemocratic changes and legislative initiatives across various countries in the region, aiming at suppressing civil sector and narrowing the space for activism and advocacy for communities and activists. So in 2012, Russia adopted a foreign agent law. This year, identical laws have been adopted in Georgia, in Kyrgyzstan, and moreover, we are seeing similar legislative initiatives aligned in spirit and purpose emerging in Europe as well, in Hungary, in Slovakia, and in Bosnia-Herzegovina. Notably, drug policy and harm reduction often become tools in political power plays. Whenever governments lean towards autocratism, we immediately observe an increase in police persecution of people who use drugs, along with a decline in quality of health care. In most countries of ECA region, OST coverage is very low and does not respond to the actual needs of people who use drugs. Existing drug users registries in most countries of ECA region create a high barrier in accessing life-saving treatment. In Georgia, take-home dosages are now not possible anymore, even though during COVID times it was accessible. In Kazakhstan, the pilot program of OST treatment is under risk of closure because a group of opponents has been actively campaigning for its closure. However, in Kazakhstan, government has currently decided to continue OST program after urgent country visit of ECA Drug Policy Commission. So now I will present some data and statistics to provide more clear picture of what happens on the ground. The data presented here was gathered by communities and represents the real situation and the tip of iceberg of human rights violations. And this is just a part we managed to document. Today I'm speaking here on behalf of vulnerable communities who cannot openly advocate for their rights due to risks of persecution and discrimination they can face from their governments. So the resource of data. Data presented here was documented through the biggest CLM tool used to document and, importantly, to respond to human rights violations, discriminations, stigma, incidents against vulnerable to HIV communities. This system was introduced in 2019 in Ukraine, and now this tool is operative in 14 countries of ECA region and unites more than 270 NGOs and community-based organizations in the region. Since 2019, we have documented more than 27,000 cases in the region. So what the data says? People who use drugs are the second largest vulnerable group whose rights are most frequently violated. The number of documented cases in each country highlights frequency of rights violations of people who use drugs. However, it also reflects the scale of documentation process. For instance, the chart shows a high number of cases in Ukraine. This is partially due to the war, but also it is because a big scale of implementation of this process. Over 60 NGOs participate in a documentation process in Ukraine, comparing to Uzbekistan, where just only one organization is able to do documentation and responding to human rights violations. So the law enforcement agencies and healthcare workers are the primary violators of the rights of people who use drugs. Interestingly, in more democratic countries like Ukraine and Moldova, most reported violations involve healthcare sector. This is because people who use drugs feel safer seeking medical help, they understand their rights to proper services, and they recognize that stigma and discrimination are unacceptable. Meanwhile, in Central Asian countries, the majority of cases highlight ongoing persecution by law enforcement agencies. In Moldova and Ukraine, common complaints concern the quality and accessibility of OST treatment. In contrast, in Uzbekistan, such therapy is entirely unavailable, and instead, people who use drugs face near daily harassment and blackmailing from the police. So, the main types and the most common incidents of human rights violations we have documented against people who use drugs are intimidation, threats, blackmailing, hate speech, police abuse, abuse of power by police, extortion of money and bribes, refusal to provide OST treatment, illegal detention, humiliating treatment during staying in medical institutions, refusal to provide hospital care and emergency support, and more types of different rights violations. According to our information, every person who used drugs has an unpleasant experience with the police at least once in their life, and they are unlikely to turn to police when some crime happens or when their rights are violated. Moreover, one in three detained drug users has been subjected to tortures or cruel treatment during detention. This is most commonly seen in police using force to extract confession, even for crimes that detainee didn't commit, as well as intensively holding them in detention to restrain access to OST and induce withdrawal syndrome, all with the aim to pressuring the detainee to confess crimes and to take the guilt for the crime which was not committed by this detainee. So, in contrast, I would like to give some example of Ukraine, which, despite resisting to Russian occupation, continues to provide services to vulnerable groups. In particular, during the war, the dynamic of enrollment of patients into OST program continues to increase. This year, our government legalized medical cannabis, and the new national strategy, drug policy strategy is under development, and we really hope that more human and more progressive approaches will be implemented within this strategy. So, as in conclusion, I would like to emphasize once again that autocratic regimes restrict human rights and harm essential backbones of health-related response for people who use drugs, such as civil society, community, OST treatment, harm reduction. This fuels new HIV infections. Ukraine has shown the regional way to open-minded, community-driven, person-centered, and innovative programming, which have led to controlling and reducing HIV epidemics among people who use drugs, including in the war situation. Let's choose the right direction.
Слава Україні! You don't know how to respond. You need to say Слава Україні and then Героям Слава! Oh, now good.
That was Victoria Kalinyuk with the Alliance for Public Health speaking at the 6th European Harm Reduction Conference on a panel entitled Navigating Human Rights in Drug Policy Reform. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now, let's hear some more from the 6th European Harm Reduction Conference and that panel entitled Navigating Human Rights in Drug Policy Reform. Magdalena Dabkowska is coordinator of the drug policy program at the Helsinki Foundation for Human Rights in Warsaw, Poland.
So very, very basically and quickly about the basics of the human rights protection system. I really encourage you to visit the webpage that was created at the celebration of the 50th anniversary. Of the system. It's been a few years ago already, but I believe that materials that are there are really reader-friendly and quite short, and they might be very informative. Because we have all heard a lot, I believe, about the three drug conventions that clearly impact people's lives and our everyday work. But there are also, as you've heard, at least 9 treaties, they are human rights documents. But if you don't feel, I mean, I don't want to discourage you, but if you feel it's too advanced to read the 9 of them, just make sure you go through the 3. We've got the Universal Declaration of the Human Rights, and on the basis of that, 2 treaties that list the 2 covenants that list 1 civil and political rights. I'm so sorry. I had too much sugar for the lunch. And the other one that covers economic, social, and cultural rights that I will be referring to today. And the 2 documents list the human rights that everyone is entitled to. And I really want to say it slowly and loudly, everyone is entitled to. Human rights are embedded in the fact that we are human beings. And no circumstances, nothing can deprive you of these rights. They may be violated by the states, but remember that you always have them. Everyone always have them, regardless of what the drug conventions force the states or the states choose to do on the basis of them. And here is the list of the rights. On the left column, the civil and political rights, and on the right column, the economic, social, and cultural rights. And I need to admit that we as human rights defenders often focus on the left column, on the civic and political rights. And when you look at the list, you will understand why. You will find the very basic rights there, like the right to life, freedom from torture, etc. So it is understandable. But at the same time, when you look at the right-hand column, you will see that economic, social, and cultural rights are actually those that cover each corner of our everyday life. You will find that the right to family life, to housing, to employment, to social security, to education, and to health, as it was mentioned, and many others. So actually, all the levels of everyone's life are covered by these ones. And it was 2 years ago when the Committee on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, so the UN body that oversees and monitors to what extent states actually protect those rights, how they fulfill the covenant, the committee announced they may create the general comment a kind of a guideline for the states, focused on drug policy and how the policies and the laws and the implementation actually violate or to what extent it influences the possibility of people to enjoy the rights, the economic, social, and cultural rights. And it was the moment when civil society around the world came together thinking, okay, we need to do something to make sure that if the general comment really is created, it is fed with the up-to-date information from the ground, from the stories of people's lives. And this is exactly, as Hannah mentioned, when Helsinki Foundation and EHRA decided to join forces. And we held together a number of civil society consultations in the region, one in person, eight, I think, online meetings, where we gathered civil society representatives from 19 countries of the region, drug policy advocates, harm reduction providers, community members, people who live with AHV or AIDS, who use drugs, etc., to consult and to hear their stories. And then we also did a bit of a desk research. On the basis of that, we collected the huge material. The report is being prepared right now. It's going to be a long one. The material, as I said, is huge. The summary was already submitted to CESCAR, to the committee. It was presented at this year's session of the Convention on Narcotic Drugs, and it has already informed a number of UN submissions. And today I wanted to say what we found, so I'll keep the list of the rights visible to you. So we identified, of course, significant barriers to the realization of the economic, social, and cultural rights. And it will be no surprise to you when I say that the criminalization of drug use emerged as a cross-cutting issue that really exacerbates existing challenges in relation to all these rights. Laws that penalize possession and use of drugs for personal consumption, and this is what usually happens in the countries of the region, reinforce stigma and discrimination and create significant barriers to accessing essential services such as healthcare, social security, and employment. We mentioned the healthcare, and this is the right that usually pops up as the first one when we think about economic, social, and cultural rights, as Ghana rightfully said. And it is clear to all of us why. Because drug use is a health-related issue. So we all know that also that access to harm reduction in the region is very limited, not only in this region, but this is the case. When you think about opioid agonist therapy, it is still banned in Russia and in Uzbekistan. In many countries, it is non-existent in prisons, in some even in hospitals. The way the OAT programs are created, not allowing for take-home medication, for example, prevent a lot of people from really leading a normal life and obtaining and then maintaining their employment. So there's a lot that can be said about OAT, about harm reduction, about access to AHV, but these are not only these issues. And again, there are also groups that are doubly targeted, I would say, by the violations, for example, women. We are also talking about the violation of their or our reproductive rights, especially when you think about women who use drugs. It may have the form of even the trials or really done forced abortions. This is about access to contraceptive services, to anti- and postnatal care, antiretroviral therapy, prevention of mother-to-child AHV transmission services, and many others. And the situation even worsens when we look at women from Roma communities. This is the minority in the region that is also, again, doubly or even third layer targeted by the violations. I mentioned abortion, the forced abortion, the trials to do so, which takes us to the family lives and how you can be deprived of your parental rights if you are a person who is identified as one that uses drugs. You can even lose the right to have your child with you. I mean, there are places when parental rights may be terminated for parents who use drugs. either according to the legislation or actually just based on the practice and not rooted in the law. In Belarus, for example, if one of the parents at least uses drugs, that the child can be taken away and put into institution, into orphanage, and then parents have to cover the cost of the stay of the child. So it's not only separation, which is horrendous, and to me as a mother, difficult to imagine even, but then also you need to pay the costs. One of the interviewees in Poland who works in the harm reduction service also shared the story when a child was taken away from mom right after the birth, right after she gave birth, in the hospital because she was an OIT patient, which is not a legal basis in Poland to take the child away, but because doctors were so uninformed about OIT, because they were so worried, they put the whole procedure, and it took 3 months to get the child back to his mother. So awful stories do happen. When we think about the right to the family life, also thinking about women, mothers who are exposed to the family inter-family violence, simply by the fact that they use drugs, they are sometimes or quite often actually in the region denied access to shelters. So we are moving right now to the right to housing and to the conditions of our life. Again, in many places, the fact that you have a history of drug use actually prevents you from using shelters. It sometimes differs in places regarding whether you're a so-called active drug user or in treatment, but in other places, it doesn't really matter. So people have simply no roof on top of their heads. In Hungary, for example, it goes even further. The constitution bans and criminalizes homelessness. So meaning sleeping on a street is a criminal offense. At the same time, the state doesn't provide enough places in the shelters. So it's like a limbo. So we do have all those situations. Again, prisons, the overcrowded prisons, I think about like the roof on top of your head, some people end up imprisoned. And again, this is the circumstances where they cannot access the right conditions of their life, the right conditions of healthcare. I'm quickly looking at my numerous notes just to share maybe a few more examples that would be illustrating, as I said, how each single corner of the life can be influenced. I haven't still mentioned the right to work, and then probably I should stop because I could continue and continue and continue. So again, in many places, if you are perceived to be a person who uses drugs, or if you are an OIT patient, you may be excluded from employment. You may be, either by the law or by the practice, subject to drug testing or AIHV testing. And again, it brings the possibility you will lose your job. As I mentioned, the way the OIT are designed prevents a lot of people from going to work on daily basis. If you're not employed, then you cannot access the social services quite often. Even the health insurance in many places, it is connected with the employment, with the official employment. So if you don't have a legal job, then you actually cannot access healthcare services. So there's more and more on that. It relates also to education, to whether kids at the age of 16, as far as I remember in Hungary, can already be kicked out of school because of drug use. Sniffing dogs are allowed. Testing is allowed in many places. I mean, like students testing. Then you've got your universities. So really, when you think about like everyday lives of people, when you think about your life also, like when you go to the job, or then when you go to meet your family doctor, or your kids go to your school, etc. Each of these layers could be influenced by how the drug laws are created, and then also enforced. And on top of all of that, we have the criminalization. So it's not only stigma, it's not only the fact that you may be using drugs. In addition to that, if you have ever been convicted, you also have the criminal record. And again, it influences all those areas. You may have difficulties obtaining the job because you've got the criminal record. You may not be allowed to adopt children because you've got the criminal record, etc., etc. So it can go over and over. And it was really striking to me to see how many violations there are that on one hand, we may say, we've known about them. It's not that we found out new things, but how they piled up and actually how wide range of them we discovered, that was striking to me. And I realized also as a human rights person that we really need to focus way more on social, economic, and cultural rights. And I'll be just showing one last slide, I promise. I'll skip this one, unfortunately. But I would like to finish with a call. I understand that people who provide harm reduction, who work in the communities, I am fully aware that you've got hands full of work. This is completely understandable, and I have a lot of respect. But if you find a tiny bit of time and energy, please do document people's testimonies. The stories have a huge power. We've heard a lot about numbers. We've heard a lot about the strategies, the documents, the decisions that stay on paper. But I believe and I've observed that sometimes the human story can have a lot of power. So if you have the possibility, document the testimonies, collect data. If you find even more time and energy, try to submit, to make your own submissions to different UN mechanisms. There will be the workshop today about that. We're happy to help as well. If you don't feel like doing it, at least share the stories with us. We may also try to make use of them. Then when there are reports coming, like when there are so outcomes of this work, make sure to use them at the country level. Make sure you keep your governments, local governments, accountable, and whatever recommendations they receive from the UN bodies, this is our job also, to point to them each time and to ask, what have you done about it?
That was Magdalena Dubkowska, coordinator of the drug policy program at the Helsinki Foundation for Human Rights, speaking at the 6th European Harm Reduction Conference on a panel entitled Navigating Human Rights in Drug Policy Reform. And for now, that's it. You've been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. A big thank you to my friends at Drug Reporter for live streaming so much of this European Harm Reduction Conference. And thanks especially to the hosts and sponsors of the conference for allowing all that amazing, inspiring, informative content to be made available free to the public. Many thanks to everyone out there fighting for civil rights, human rights, and social justice. And thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. Free Culture Radio is available as a podcast or direct download. Links are at the website, kboo.fm/freeculture, along with an archive of past shows. Theme music for Free Culture Radio is composed and performed by Tom Nickel and Four Dimensional Nightmare, and is used with permission of the artist. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!